Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Somehow he is a third option to Pat Bev and DeAnthony Melton. And quite frankly, if he were just played like a decent third option, they'd probably win that game. Starts a game 5 for 7 from the field, makes just one of his final nine shots. A lot of them weren't even close. A lot of them were blocked, quite frankly. Started to see indecisive Toby a lot there down a stretch. Some really bad turnovers, really bad decisions. He cost them a game that, look, I think for much of this game, I didn't entirely know how to react, because on the one hand, they had no business being in that game. Like, Boston came into that game with an 8-0 record and a plus 19.7 net rating up in Boston at home. The Sixers, without Maxey, without Embiid, 60 points, adding Batum. What's Batum averaging? Maybe 7 or 8? I don't even know what he's averaging.
Yeah, less than 10 points a game.
Losing 68 points in your starting lineup, including really of the only three that can really pass on a team. You don't expect them to succeed. That being said, you got literally a career night from Patrick Beverley. He tied his career high with 27 points, also added in 8 rebounds, 7 assists. The first time, it has to be the first time since like junior high school, that Patrick Beverley was ISO hunting. And he was doing this against a good team. Like, he was drawing big men out and just draining step back threes. When you get that kind of performance, you have a chance to steal one in Boston, a chance to go up 2-1. In the series lead, and for Tobias to come up small, it was really, really frustrating. I did not expect to be frustrated tonight, but here I am.
I mean, it was so bad from Tobias that I have people tweeting at me saying, was he shaving points out there? Was he actively sabotaging the team? And you actually had to think for like 2 seconds to be like, could it have been that bad? Honestly, like, watching him out there, the play that killed me the most was, there was probably, I want to say, like 4 minutes left, less than 5 minutes left. A very close game. Every possession matters down the stretch. And this is a microcosm of Tobias Harris's entire career. He's above the break and he gets stuck between doing two different things. He's thinking, should I pick up my dribble and pass the ball? Should I hold my dribble in case I need it to do something else? Instead, he does fucking neither, and he gets called for a double dribble because Tobias is not capable of thinking in advance before doing something. It's so mechanical that he tries to do two things at once and fails at both of them at the same time. And where you end up with is they have a winnable game. To your point, Derek, a winnable game that we didn't think was even going to be close. We're joking about, talking about Ninja Turtles or Blade Runner or video games or some ridiculous shit on this show. Patrick Beverley plays his ass off. DeAnthony Melton fouls out. These guys are still cobbling together a passable basketball team. You could have taken any non-Korkmaz player on the roster that was available tonight, put him in Harris's spot, and they would have been better simply because he wouldn't have been on the floor. That is how bad he was. He wasn't just like, oh, he missed a few shots. He actively harmed their chances to win. Yeah. And that's the guy making $40 fucking million. Like, again, we're not pocket watchers here. He makes what he makes. We judge these guys based on what they contribute to the team, to the game, and on the floor. We don't need to get into like playing fake GM or anything like that. But that guy being your third most important player by virtue of the amount of money that he makes, you are hamstrung in big moments because he is as important to this team as he is.
Yeah. And look, I think we've both been giving Tobias his praise for his early season performance. We like the mentality he came out with. The contract is what it is. You can obsess over it, but it's not going to change. At this point, you keep him until you have a trade that makes sense. That being said, his last couple of games have been awful. Really, the last week or two have been bad. Today was as bad as we have seen from him in a long, long time. And that includes playoff performances where he has traditionally struggled. This was as bad as you will see him play. And it's not even like, yeah, Boston's a great defensive team and they make it tough. But so many of these mistakes were self-inflicted. So many of these, like when he got double blocked by Horford there, he had like he was a pump fake away from making an easy layup. And yeah, that was one of the few times in Tobias's career I've ever gone, he's probably trying to be a little too aggressive. He just seemed like he was in his head and didn't know how to attack. And then you had that real bad hesitation turnover where he got called for the travel. Because again, he's indecisive about everything right now. And we've said this so many times. Yes, the Sixers need Tobias Harris to be aggressive for him to be successful. But Tobias Harris will be aggressive when he's successful. And the moment he hits adversity, it's just every second guess in the world comes into his brain and brings out the worst version of him.
Dude, he played so bad in that second half that coming out of that game, I mean, there are so many guys that I think can hold their heads high and be like, man, that guy was awesome in that game. Pat Bev, literally like career best game as a scorer, carries the offense for stretches of that game. Mo Bamba, Derek, who you and I have killed many times on this podcast, stock down, shouldn't play, maybe shouldn't be on the roster anymore, gives them some really good second half minutes. Yep. Robert Covington gets to the free throw line seven different times, scores 18 points. That is not a typical Robert Covington game. Now has a crucial turnover in the final few minutes, but overperforms what we're expecting. Paul Reed, 6 of 7 from the floor, hits a three, got the start, made a difference with rim rolling gravity and all kinds of other stuff, rim protection, doing big man things that they didn't have in these games where Marcus Morris starts at center. And all I can think about is what a bullshit performance that is from Tobias Harris. Like, it just drives me crazy that guy who's, we credit him as like the leader and the pulse of the team half the time, and he deserves that credit for what he does in the locker room and yada yada. You gotta fucking do something on the court, man. Like, I know it's just like, he is who he is right by now, and it shouldn't make me mad anymore. I shouldn't be this frustrated that like this guy that I've seen this movie 100 times is showing the same thing, but I'm still somehow all these years later just mad watching that nonsense.
I am trying to find out who said this in the chat, but somebody point out that it's been 144 games since Tobias scored 30 points. Brandon Savish in the chat. I went back and looked it up. Can you guess the last time he hit 30 points?
I do. No.
It is February 2022. Almost 2 full years ago, which is pretty wild for, again, a guy who makes $45 million. And I've tried very hard because I think for the first couple of years of Tobias's contract, I was hyper-focused on it. It was hard to get past. He was getting in the way of what you want to do team building. At some point, you just kind of accepted it. And you look at it now and, all right, at least it's an expiring deal. You can use it as salary matching. It's just not hindering you like it was. It actually is an asset because of that salary matching. But for a guy making that much money, and look, he's been playing alongside, he was a fourth option for a bunch last year, I know that. But man, when you need him to step up in some of these moments, he just needs to step up, and he just couldn't. And scoring is his thing. Like, he's worked himself into being a passable defender, at times good, in the playoffs usually very good, or at least above average. You need him to score, and you need him to take threes. How many threes did he end up with? Three-point attempts. Not many. I feel like it was
one. And he
made
it.
One three-point attempt, the four turnovers. He can't do that. There were three-point shots open. The Sixers,
and that's after taking two the other night, and we were pissed off about him for that. This is a game where they had even less guys available to play. Nick Batum didn't play. Tyrese Maxey didn't play.
And a team in Boston who, every time you put the ball on the deck, they're going to really dig down and try to, you know, strip it out of your hands. And he just hesitate. It drives the three-point shot drives me insane. One attempt on a night where the Sixers got up 35. You need more from Tobias. You just need more.
The thing that's really baffling about all of it, this is a game where there's literally no pressure on you or the team. Pat Bev comes out and he's playing as free as could possibly be, taking runners and floaters and step back threes and just like look, this is house money, man. And that's how you come into a game like this. That's how you win games like this. That guys come in and they're just like, well, fuck it. Like, it doesn't really matter if we lose this game. Nobody's going to kill us for this. And yet you and I have now spent the first like 8 minutes of this show killing this guy because he melted down in a game where there were no real stakes or pressure on these guys to perform. He still came up small. I think that's what irritates me more than anything. Just like, go out there and play like there's nothing to lose, man, because there wasn't. And now I'm still mad anyway.
Pat Bev was literally drawing switches on Luke Kornet so he could drain step back threes in his face. You just needed Tobias to be decent, and he was nowhere near it. He was nowhere. What was frustrating was I felt like he came out and he was good to start. Like, he was taking the ball to the rack. He was finishing strong, and it just all flipped after halftime, and it was just one of the worst performances. And like, Tobias has been frustrating at times, good at times. Like, he's a real up and down player, but man, this was one of the worst halves we've almost ever seen from him.
I don't even feel bad. It's like, at a certain point, I think it's overkill to keep going in and in and in and in on one guy. But like, he's the single reason that they lost that game. I don't think there's any, I mean, if you want to try to say Furkan's like 14 minutes or whatever were so bad.
The other place I would go to are the refs. Like,
The officials were terrible.
Them not winning that challenge when Pat Bev got hit in the groin, like, that should have been a flagrant one. That's an automatic flagrant one when you get hit there. We saw that with Harden last year. Even on Harden had a push-off, an offensive foul that got called for a flagrant one in the playoffs. For that to not be overturned and be made into a four-point play for the Celtics, that was huge. That could cost them the game. If it wasn't for Tobias, we'd probably be talking about the refs a little bit more here. But yeah, he was, look, and I probably don't get mad at this point, because I don't think Tobias isn't, like, the only time I really get truly angry, like physically angry, is when the effort isn't there. And I don't think that's Tobias's problem, but he's just so far in his head right now. It's just maddening.
Just a classic overthinker, as somebody who also overthinks in his own life from time to time.
Is.
He's an overthink. But yeah, I mean, the officials were atrocious. Maybe not as bad as Tobias Harris was, but I mean, just crazy, crazy bad from Tobias. I'm sorry. You're going to have to like pull me out of this Tobias rant mode, because otherwise I'll be stuck on this for the next half hour. And
I mean, look,
can't possibly talk about how bad he was for that long.
We podcast so much. Like, we don't have to get to everything in this game. If you want to go for a 45 minute straight rant,
it gets gratuitous at a certain point.
It's like I said, on the one hand, coming in, they're playing with house money. It's hard for me to get mad at this loss. Mad at the Tobias performance, sure. But getting mad at the loss wasn't something I expected at any point coming into today's game. Even if Maxi would have played, it would have been hard to beat this team without Joel. With Maxi and Embiid out, it was almost impossible. But they were in a position to do the impossible thanks to a career night from a bunch of people. It's unexpectedly frustrated is not where I expected to be.
Do they win that game with Dorian Finney-Smith and Tobias Harris's place?
Nope. We're not doing that.
We're not? Why not?
Because we'll do that in February. We'll do that in February.
Listen, I'm just saying Dorian Finney-Smith
was... saying we can't lead with Dorian Finney-Smith two shows in a row. We can't do it.
I'm just saying, because he was a recent topic and there are a lot of people in the comments like, no, they don't need him. He's not helpful. It's like, well, might have been more helpful than that guy.
Yeah. I mean, all right. I'm sure after this next break, we will get not there yet, but we will get into some of the things that maybe made us happy watching the game. Some of the good performances, surprisingly good performances. It's hard not to focus on that because you just need, and it really goes into the pure Tobias experience where like the moment something goes wrong, you lose faith in him. And again, I think he was real good for the first 8 or 9 games. He has hit a rough patch, and I'm sure at some point he's going to make all of his threes again, and he might even take a couple, and he will play good basketball and find his spots, and we'll go, all right, he's actually kind of useful here, and no, he's not worth his contract, but hard to get too mad at him. But right now, when he's in these down spots, it's incredibly frustrating.
Derek, you got to pull me off the ledge on this one. Not off the ledge, just like, I'm going to go home and I'll be mostly fine, but... Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just...
honestly, I'm surprised that Tobias can get this kind of emotional reaction from us, because I feel like you and I have just sort
like
of
I like, said, we've seen this movie before.
We've been at this for so long. We're like, you know what the contract is. Try to move on from it. You know who Tobias is as a player. You know about the ups and downs. You know that when he's confident, he's going to look good. When he's not confident, he's going to drive you completely insane. So for him to have this performance where we're this frustrated and spending the first 15 minutes of a show where the Sixers as a team overperformed on Tobias Harris, it was one of the more disappointing performances you can see from a player who has not lived up to his contract at any point. And again, I've never really held it against him that he signed that contract. That was Elton Brand's mistake. Tobias Harris was never a $40+ million a year player. He's never been an all-star. He's always been a legitimate starter and a good player, but never a great player, never great at anything. He's just sort of like a guy. I remember one of my at The Athletic, I think at one point I called Tobias Harris just a guy, and my editor's like, do you want to soften that down a bit? I'm like, no, he's kind of just a guy. He's a useful guy, sure, but he's not anything that is a centerpiece for him to get that contract. I mostly blame Elton Brand. I don't blame him for signing it, but my God, when you have a chance to win a game, like, just be competent.
I said some meaner stuff. I believe when they lost in the bubble, I called him a mid-level player making a max-level deal contract or something along those lines.
It will be fascinating what he gets for his next contract. He'll get more than a mid-level, I'm pretty confident, even though mid-levels are really, really high right now. But he's nowhere near $45 million. Anyway, we'll have future
Derek,
shows on that.
Do you know who I would like to sign a max-level deal with? Our next partner, AG1, the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I drink it basically every day at this point. I gave AG1 a try because, as I say about Derek and I every time, we're in here eating all kinds of horrible stuff at night between candy. Derek's always got a big thing of soda alongside him that we keep talking about trying to break that habit. And I need something to replenish my vitamins, get me going in the morning, and make sure that I'm offsetting some of the poorer health choices that I make. And since I started adding some AG1 to my morning routine about a month ago now, I can feel a noticeable difference in my energy in the mornings. And that's when I tend to struggle the most as a night owl. AG1 replaces your multivitamin, probiotic, and more in one simple drinkable habit. And it helps you build your health foundation first. When you take AG1 every day, you're starting a micro habit with macro benefits, and you're doing it in the simplest way possible. At a cost of less than $3 a day, your body can't afford not to have AG1. So if a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, then try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/PHLYSixers. That's drinkag1.com/PHLYSixers. Check it out today.
We also want to tell you about our favorite recovery beverage, chocolate milk, brought to you by Pennsylvania Dairy Farmers and Team Chocolate Milk. I think it's going to be my post-show beverage of choice today. I might need something a little stronger than chocolate milk, but tomorrow when I try to get outside, get a little activity in, chocolate milk is what I will turn to.
There you go.
Athletes have known about the power of chocolate milk as a refuel and recovery beverage for a long time. Chocolate milk provides high-quality protein for muscle repair, electrolytes for hydration, and calcium for strong bones. That's why studies consistently show that chocolate milk is an ideal sports recovery beverage. Whether you're recovering after a workout at the gym, a run around Boathouse Row, or a bike ride on a Schuylkill Trail, chocolate milk is an ideal post-workout beverage. Taking care of your body doesn't end when the clock hits zero on your workout routine. Give your body what it needs to properly recover. What could be better than a scientifically proven recovery beverage made right here in Pennsylvania that also tastes great? Learn more about how chocolate milk can help you refuel and recover after your next workout by visiting teamchocolatemilk.com.
There you go, buddy.
Look,
do you want to get back on the positive side for a little bit and palate cleanse after I just completely lost my mind there for about 15 minutes?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Do you want to start off with Melton or Bev?
I think we got to start with Pat Bev. Yeah. I have killed him or him by extension a lot this year where I've said, please, God, get another ball handler for this team. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Tyus Jones, there's the obligatory mention, DeLon Wright, Jordan Clarkson, who can't play in the playoffs, but whatever. whatever you need to do to get a ball handler on the team, because I have not been a believer in what they've shown with the bench offense and more specifically with Pat Bev running the show. And he did a damn good job running that team tonight. Deserves a lot of credit for it. Like, look, shot the heck out of the ball, which always helps. I'm not expecting him to make multiple step back threes a game. Not expecting him to make a three a game, let alone multiple step back threes.
The first 3 weeks of the season, he couldn't get the ball to the rim. He could not physically get the ball deep enough to even really attempt a viable three. What did he start off, like 3 for 22 from three?
It was very bad. It was bad enough that you and I were like, why is this guy playing on some days? And then, look, beyond that, though, I think he did a really good job of using the shot to set up everything else he did. I thought there were a few times where I actually compared it in the recap I did for all PHLY to loading up a trebuchet, because there were a couple times where the ball comes out to him and it's just like the slowest up fake ever. But he drew somebody out, and the second he got the guy overcommitted to the closeout, Pat put the ball on the floor, got to his spot, and either took, like, you know, a little mid-ranger, a runner, a floater, or he found somebody else after the defense collapsed, and they end up getting a pretty good shot out of it. I mean, he hit Mo Bamba for a couple of trail threes in the second half. I thought that was a good show of his quote-unquote point guard skills. Really very little to complain about for him as the guy who was thrust into a much bigger role than you and I probably both think he should be playing on a night-to-night basis. That was good as he can possibly play offensively, I think.
I never want to see Pat Bev handling the ball that much again. Never. Not a single time for the rest of the season. Certainly not beyond this season. No, that was as good as he could have possibly done against what is a tough matchup for somebody trying to, you know, overextend himself offensively. He made those threes. He used that, like you said, to get into the paint. He made some pretty tough finishes that shocked the hell out of me. And then he did that set up to drive and kick. He did pretty much everything you could hope for, with the exception of maybe that late foul on Holiday where he came in from behind to try to block the shot. Not a shot that you necessarily want to commit a foul on. Outside of that, he was almost flawless. Again, this is a role that if there was any player you looked at and you said, boy, you don't really want to try to ramp him up offensively, Pat Beverly is it. And if there's any opponent where you really say that, this is probably the opponent. This was a tough matchup for him. And I was stunned. Like, he made some of those step back threes and you're just like hitting the desk. Like, you can't believe it.
You and I were whooping and hollering.
Just incredible. And again, that's what makes this a tough loss, because you had a chance to steal it, because Patrick Beverly and DeAnthony Melton put you in a spot to steal a game against a team that, look, I expect Boston to win more games. I don't think the tiebreaker is really going to matter, but you never know. Crazy shit could happen. Certainly, you expect the Sixers to be in the top three or four in the East, even with their recent struggles. Tiebreakers matter. Seeding matters, and this was a chance to take a 2-1 lead in the season series. And Patrick Beverly is, I don't want to say certainly he was not the only reason, because I think outside of Tobias, pretty much everyone played well. And Furkan, but he was a primary reason to put you in a unexpected spot.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've come to appreciate, Derek, the more that we've watched him night to night, for a little guy, he sure rebounds hard and goes after, chases rebounds hard. And I think some of that, other guys have talked about it, that it's a mandate from Nick Nurse that they're a bad rebounding team last year, and he wants them to chase offensive rebounds. I actually think our good buddy Jerome Weitzman wrote a story on Tyrese Maxey and, you know, some of the positive changes the Sixers have undergone this year that he published either today or yesterday, brought up that. And I think Pat embodies that. I think Pat, every time there's a rebound that's up for grabs, very similar to Jaden Springer in this way, where they just throw their body at it. Now, Jaden has a lot more athleticism to offer than Pat at this stage of his career. But
at any stage of his career.
But I enjoy that part of it, because that is something that, like, every guy controls their destiny on those type of plays to some extent, right? Like, you can't say every guy is going to be a great rebounder, but every guy can give themselves a chance to get rebounds. And I would say he gives himself a chance on 99% of rebounds that he could get in the mix for. So on top of, you know, playmaking he did, the shot making that he offered. That's something he brings every single night. Showed up tonight. I think he ended up, he had 8 rebounds, including 2 offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be the primary driver for of value for him, but it's something that's nice that will help him, you know, if he has a bad shooting night, if he's not floor general Pat Bev on a given night, that, you know, he can still provide a little bit of value in that way.
Yeah. And it becomes a little easier to slot him into a role when the shot's falling. Because like you said, you want another ball handler, whether that's for the backup units or maybe another starter who can then shift to the backup units and run some offense. You need more creation. You need more ball handling. Patrick Beverley has to be able to make a shot. And I think I've been pleasantly surprised by his defense. The shot over the last 4 or 5 games is coming around. And if that continues to maintain, then it's a lot, like I said, a lot easier to slot him in there. I don't know what was wrong with him to start the year. Like I said, he just didn't look like he had the legs to get at the rim. Started off 3 for 22. But if this is more of what you can expect out of him, then I am more bullish on the Patrick Beverley experience than I expected to be. And I'm trying not to get caught up in, again, what was legitimately a career night, even though I think this was like his 612th game in the NBA, because he spent the first couple of years playing overseas. But a career night from Patrick Beverley, tied his career high, certainly when you add in what he did as a distributor, a role he's usually not asked to fulfill. Probably the best game of his career. Trying not to get caught up in a moment, but I am certainly gaining more confidence in him.
Yeah, and we do have a super chat from our buddy Ash Munro. Thank you, as always. Ash says, guys, the Celtics are not world beaters. Fully healthy Sixers with 1 or 2 additions. Going to have a great chance to beat this Celtics team in the playoffs. What's your snap take on that?
My snap take is, let's see. Like, I think, especially with the Celtics, there's maybe no team that could look more like different at the end of the year than they do now. I think they are all still sort of learning how to play alongside each other. Right now, their offense, I think I said this in the last pod, their offense coming in was like the 8th ranked offense in the league, which is okay, but I think I expect them to be better. Jaylen Brown specifically doesn't look like he's fully comfortable yet in his new role, or at least with his less frequent touches, and getting all of them, you know, with 2 major additions to their offensive system in Porzingis and in Holiday, and then getting Brown to mix in with that, and even just becoming better defensively and communicating better and figuring out what to switch, what not to switch, where they can be aggressive, where they want to stick on shooters. I think that is a team that's going to get better throughout the course of the year. And I also think that's a team that in the buyout market, you know, when we get to late February, could be active there.
Well, if the buyout market really exists anymore with the new CBA changes.
But I think that's a team where if there are veterans, they could end up going there. Depth is always something you can get. Their top 6 is real good when healthy. We haven't seen them with their full obviously, Sixers fans, like, we Sixers were losing a little more talent than the Celtics at this one, but we haven't really seen very many instances between these two teams where both teams have been fully healthy. I would not read too much into early season successes or failures against this team. I think the second half of the season will be more telling.
Yeah, and also, you know, as much as we give the Sixers credit for what they did tonight and how they showed up without their 2 best players, Boston is a team that tends to play down to their competition. They are talented enough to get away with it more than the old lethargic Sixers used to, when it was, you know, Jimmy, Ben, and Joel just farting their way through a game against the Orlando Magic, or the old Orlando Magic, I should say. Boston does that pretty constantly, and has done that for most of Tatum and Brown's time together, especially over the last few years. So I don't read super hard into a game like this for them.
Right.
I think it's more a positive reflection of the Sixers guys. They didn't take this opportunity for granted. Guys stepped up. They were in bigger roles. But I don't think it tells us a whole lot about the Sixers-Celtics matchup as a whole. The previous 2 games, I think the first one that the Sixers outplayed them in showed a lot.
Yep.
But game after that, you know, Brown's out, Porzingis is out. This game, no Joel, no Maxey. Like, in the playoffs, if the Sixers are down guys, they're going to get waxed by this team. And if they're at full strength, we still don't know. We don't even know what the final version of the Sixers team is going to look like yet. So we're a long ways off from worrying about any of that.
Yep. Yep. No, look, it's... I think you're 100% correct. That was a great game. It was, well, outside of Tobias. It was a fun game to watch, unexpectedly exciting, unexpectedly close. I don't think you can read too much into it. And I think if the Celtics, you know, if they have Porzingis and if they're going up against the Sixers, I don't want to say that it was a letdown game, but you're locked in a little differently when I think you can take it for granted when Embiid and Maxey are out of the lineup. And certainly with the way the Celtics played in the first half with all the turnovers, and that was actually, a real key. The first half, the Sixers forced a lot of turnovers and didn't really capitalize on them. They left points on the board. And on a night where they were making a lot of threes and doing things to overcome the talent deficit, leaving points on the board in transition, I think really ended up hurting them. But I think you probably see a different Celtics team too. And this Celtics team I just don't think that they're 100% on the same page and to still be, what are they, 15-4? Perfect 9-0 at home. They might be squeaking out wins over the Sixers, but I think they're going to be a different team in May and June.
Yeah, there are a few questions that have popped up, Derek, about why we think Jaden Springer got a DNP tonight. I do know he was coming off the illness, which I believe was the same thing that's now impacting Joel and Tyrese Maxey.
Patrick Beverly started, right? I think he's agent zero on this one.
Is that true? Yeah, I'm not exactly sure who the
it might be different patient strains. Zero like you is. Don't really know, but yeah.
Yeah, but judging by Joel being knocked out of a couple games, Tyrese being declared a 60-40 chance to play tonight and then being scratched right before the game, it seems like this whatever they're dealing with, this bug, is knocking guys on their ass pretty hard. So even though Jaden was technically available to play, I'd imagine Nurse was probably a little reluctant to throw him in there after that, though I certainly would have liked to see him over whatever the hell that Furkan Korkmaz performance was.
Yeah. My boy Furk. It is tough when you're a shooter to come in after not playing, get spot minutes, be thrown right in against a tough team. He was not good. Definitely before Tobias melted down, I think he was the one drawing most of your ire. He was really the only one who played poorly in the first half, so you get it. But yeah, tough spot for the Corkster. No, Beverly didn't miss any games. He couldn't have been the one with the
shooter. Yeah, I don't know where you were going with that. You know who doesn't put us in a tough spot ever, though?
Who's that?
Derek? Our good friends at Game Time. Because buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't be stressful. And Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for any event that you can think of. And guys, I also know the holidays are coming up. Maybe some of you are working on some, it's not quite last minute gift ideas quite yet, but we're into the month of December. We're past Black Friday. So as you get closer and closer, you might need to, you know, might be a stocking stuffer. It could be a big time present, an awesome concert, a game that you've really wanted to take your significant other, your mom, your dad, a friend too. Game Time's the place to go if you want to pull off a great gift at the last minute. You can get images of your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps in your set, and tickets are sent directly to your phone, so you never have to dig through your email. And there are exclusive flash deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more right up to the event. The moments, hours, minutes before the event. So it makes it really easy for you guys to get the tickets you want at the price that you want as well. So snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PHLY for $20 off of your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code PHLY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Do we want to just like actually discuss the refs now that I'm not in, you know, Tobias brain fog?
Sure. Take some of that anger and direct it at the pinstripes.
Just some absolutely horrific decisions. I mean, I don't know if you mentioned it when you brought it up the first time, Derek, but that phantom sixth foul on D'Anthony Melton was a horrible one. There was that big 4-point swing that you mentioned on the challenge that Nick Nurse lost that, not only was it a big point swing, it cost you your only challenge that you probably would have been able to use later
and honestly,
successfully overturn a second play.
Like I feel like challenges don't surprise me often because I feel like a lot of them are like close.
Yeah.
That one blew my mind. When they started reviewing that one, I'm like, there's no way that's not overturned. Stunned. Absolutely stunned. It was a horrible call.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then to give him a tech afterwards is just like unbelievable.
Yeah, you can't see. And that kind of made me, it made me feel for Jason Tatum a little bit as well, to like call the flagrant on him.
Someone just clipped just that one part.
Listen,
Kyle Newbeck feels for Jason Tatum.
To call a flagrant and then tech a guy is like, I don't know, man. No, it's a little, I don't even really know what was the explanation on that flagrant that they gave?
Well, on Tatum's?
Yeah.
I think it was an unnecessary act.
Yeah, I don't, sometimes.
I mean, at least I understand that a little bit. Like you get hit in the face, sure.
Yeah.
And I think they called him on a kick too.
Okay. So maybe it was a combination of factors. I can tell you the foul that they didn't get the overturn on was an absolute disgrace. Melton's sixth foul, absolute disgrace. Just
yeah,
a lot of disgraces out on that floor tonight.
No, I mean that not overturned call, besides the fact that it gave Boston 4 points, like just, and losing that challenge for the rest of the game, like you mentioned, just devastating for a close game. That was a real bit. And I'm not a complain about the refs guy at all.
Me like, either, generally.
I think for the most part, they'll be bad against both teams and it'll even out and control what you can control and all that stuff. They were awful tonight. Awful, awful, awful.
What do you make of that Melton performance, by the way? Because the stats are pretty ugly. I think second half, he really fell off a cliff after he started really well. But I think it probably undersells the value he provided by being somebody who could dribble, sorely missed in the final minutes.
His stats are surprisingly inefficient. And I think you're right. After halftime is when it started to look like, all right, when he can do this for a quarter or a half at a time, but you ask him to do it for a full game against good defense, eventually those limitations are going to come up. But the first half, man, he was, again, hitting step backs, coming off of, dribbling off of a screen and hitting a three, driving to the basket, pretty good finishes for him, a couple. He was real, real good. And at a time when, still, what were they down in the first quarter? They were down at 8 at the end of the first quarter.
Was it that much? I think
Boston made a pretty good late run there at the end. To claw back in the second, he was front and center for much of that. D'Anthony Melton.
You're right, 44-36.
I think Melton gave you just about everything you could have asked for in that game, even if the stats ended up looking a little tough. I have no complaints about that.
We have another super chat from Frank. So thank you to Frank for that, who asks, could Jeremy Grant be a fit for this team?
He could be a fit. The contract is
kind of a nightmare. Yeah.
What does he have? Hold on.
Although I say that within the parameters of the new CBA and the expected cap jump.
It's 30 million next year, then 32, 34, 36. That's a big contract. And my big concern with Jeremy Grant is always that he wants to do more. He wants to be more of a featured guy. He wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be creating. And that is not his ideal role. Really, over the last 4 years, ever since leaving Denver, he has done more than you would want him to. Is he a good player? Yeah. And the fact that he's now, Jeremy Grant shooting 6 threes and making 43% of them. If you were to watch that dude shoot when he came in the league, never in a million years would I have expected this to happen. So certainly when you take his defensive versatility along with his 3-point shooting, he's sort of like OG in that regard. I think some people are going to look at him and say, look, he can do more offensively than OG, and he probably can. I'm not sure you want him doing that much more offensively. I think he's probably doing too much more than he should for bad teams for the last 4 years, and I'm not sure you can get him out of that habit. That combined with the contract makes probably not the one I would go for.
And you brought up what I think is the most important thing, Derek, a subject that you and I talk about on this show a lot. I don't think he wants to scale down.
I think
after he left Denver, all the intel out of people I trust in Denver, when he signed, it was with Detroit, right? Is where he went next and signed that pretty sizable contract. All the intel out of Denver was like, he was not happy being who he was in the pecking order in Denver. And so he went and got paid a lot of money by the Pistons, got to take basically whatever shots he wanted in Detroit. And then he went to Portland after that. And that was where there was kind of a void for him to step into, where they hadn't had a real wing/forward to play with Dame and his entire tenure there. And he got a pretty sizable role. And now he's basically, if he's not the featured guy, he's certainly one of the top two on that team just by virtue of the contract and his seniority. And I don't know that he wants to go back to being
fourth option. Have a negative assist turnover guy be a 20-point per game scorer. Like, you need to have some kind of creation out of there. You need to have good decision-making out of there. It's just not the role he should be in, but I think it's a role he wants to be in. And look, if he came here, he wouldn't be... How many attempts is he having per game right now? 17 shots per game. He would never have that in a team alongside Embiid and Maxey, obviously. But I think he would want more than he probably should. That being said, like, would he help? Yeah, he'd help. Certainly, you slot him in as a four, ask him to shoot 40% from three and defend. He can do all of that. It's just with the contract and what he wants, I think he'd want more than that.
Yeah. We have another super chat from G Lee. Thank you to G Lee, who says, guys, what's a more reasonable Malcolm Brogdon or Alex Caruso? I think it's pretty clearly Brogdon. Now, it's pretty clearly more reasonable because he's got money coming to him after this year. He's got health concerns. He's also on an absolute, I mean, they're both horrible teams this year, I guess. But I think Caruso is going to have bidders all over the league, where maybe the pool of suitors for Brogdon is smaller. But I tend to think that neither is going to be as cheap as you would want them to be if you're the Sixers.
I'd agree with that. And Caruso, I mean, that would be malpractice if the Bulls don't trade Caruso. Like, they have to trade Caruso over the last couple of months.
They have to trade all those guys, frankly.
Caruso will probably be the easiest, and that's part of the problem. He's on the best contract. There's more teams that will want him because he does fit pretty much anywhere. I think the market will be stronger than you would expect for Alex Caruso. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, Brogdon would be a dice roll, right? I don't think that... He certainly makes sense in that sixth man creator type role that we've been mentioning. The good thing about Brogdon too is he can give you some off ball utility. Yep. He's a catch and shoot guy. So, you know, if you bring him off the bench and he plays in the maxi-less minutes from, let's say, 5 minute mark of the first quarter until the end of the first, he can then be in the same group with Maxey alongside him to open second and fourth quarters. And that gives you credible shooting. You have secondary creation, guy that can beat closeouts, make good decisions, do all that. Like, as an on-court fit, at least on offense, I'm not a big fan of his defensively, to say the least. Offensively, he makes a lot of sense, but he's had all kinds of health issues over the years. It's a big reason why he's not a member of the LA Clippers today, because they red flagged a thing in his physical when that trade was being considered.
And he's had red flags in his physical dating back to the draft.
Yes.
Like, he's always been there.
You're rolling the dice on that. And then what is he owed next year? I'm going to look do the podcast, but I'm pretty sure.
We do have David in the chat bringing up a good point. No more ex-Celtics. I feel like that's probably not he's not wrong.
I'm with you, David. Yeah. Malcolm Brogdon's making $22.5 million next year. That's the number one reason they will not trade for him. That's just not happening.
Yeah, again, this is sort of like what we're talking about with Dorian Finney-Smith. Tell me what else happens at the deadline if they get another significant addition, and maybe it's a bigger forward type significant addition. You go, all right, we're not going to be players in free agency now. The other player we acquired is making too much money. Maybe then you go, all right, we'll get Brogdon to finish this out. But that would be, it's dependent on what other moves are out there. And that's sort of the problem with a lot of what we're talking about now in terms of additions. A lot of it depends on, well, what's your best option? What other trade candidates are there? Does it make sense to pursue them, or should you wait until the summer? If you do pursue someone else, and what's a secondary move? I think Brogdon would probably be a secondary move. He's not going to solve your problem right now.
Do you think if they combined those moves, Caruso and Brogdon, that could potentially be enough?
It's a good point. We've got, Austin Krell, I hate giving Austin credit, but he is in chat and he brings up a good point. Is that a Newbeck hat, sort of like Nick Nurse?
No, it's Nantucket.
Okay. We should put a K there so we can have your own.
No, why would I do that? We're not doing that. You skipped over Scott G's comment, said Kyle's prediction for the Grizzlies would miss the playoffs is aging really well.
I mean, I think we both...
Trying to hate on me for my Nantucket hat, but no credit for brilliant Memphis Grizzlies
honestly,
prediction
I was just
for this
trying
season.
To make a Nick Nurse hat joke. That's all I was really doing. I think we both had our off-the-wall predictions. I think have both aged pretty well so far. A lot of season left, though.
Yeah, I mean, not... I was going to
not having a Kyle Newbeck victory tour.
I was going to make a off-color reference to Pulp Fiction, a quote from Winston Wolfe, but
gotta be careful.
I say we won't pat each other on the back just yet. Instead,
do you think Austin Krell knows Pulp Fiction? There's no chance, right?
Actually, one of the only things that Austin Krell has good takes on is movies. He's a big movie guy. Okay. Him and I can't say that he's seen Pulp Fiction for sure, but I believe that he.
That's a good point. He disappoints you in most things, most takes, food especially, but movies he is better than.
And by the way, I want to say this on the pod because it came up the other day in the media room. For anyone in the chat who knows Austin, I want you to make fun of him for this. This is technically encouraging bullying. I don't know if we'll get reported for this.
Honestly, though, this is all his fault because he hangs out in the chat.
We were in the media room the other day and somehow the childhood cartoons came up. And Austin genuinely asked, he said, is SpongeBob considered a cartoon? And when we asked him, what the hell else could it be considered? he tried to start defending himself and got humiliated right out of the media room. So, Austin, I love you, buddy, but that was not your finest moment. And he tried to compare something else. He tried to compare me not knowing for a part of my life that people drank soda with spaghetti to that. And I was like, dude, you're not even in the same universe, let alone the same ballpark.
Is it a cartoon? What the hell else could it be?
It's an animated show, buddy.
Is basketball a sport? Coming up next after the break. Before that, a quick word from FOCO. FOCO is a leading manufacturer of sports and entertainment merchandise. I love you, Austin. With a product line that includes apparel, accessories, toys, collectibles, novelty items, and more. It's the best officially licensed gear for all sports and fandoms. With being football and tailgating season, it means that overalls, hoodies, hats, sunglasses, and bags, everything you need for a game, FOCO has. And FOCO has hooked PHLY up and provided awesome pieces for our sets. FOCO always has our back.
You said Austin pieces for our sets for a second.
Thinking way too much about color right now. FOCO always has our back for Philly sports, and they have yours too. Get the best gear around by using the link in our description. For all non-presale items, use a promo code PHLY10 for 10% off. I do miss when we finally, mercifully, get Devon back. It'll be great to just be at
By the way, very, very soon. I know very I keep soon. Saying it.
It'll be great just to be able to spend the entire game at the Wells Fargo Center and no longer miss interactions like that. I have missed that. Very grateful for our job and to get to do this and actually be paid to talk about sports. It's a wild thing. I would like to be at the game again, though. I miss that.
What, you mean you enjoy going to basketball games?
I do. True story.
Crazy.
All right. Where would you like to pivot to close this one out? I thought it was a good b-ball Paul game, even though if some of those were great shot b-ball, never tried again. He had a couple of those runners against, ISOs against Al Horford that I'm not sure he pulls off all that often. But quite frankly, his skill level, I think, is going to take a lot of people by surprise. His touch around the rim is consistently good. It seems like he's always sort of fighting an instinct to try to do more than he should. But on a night like tonight, you don't have that many great options. Have at it, Paul. I thought he was real good too. And really the only interior defender, although Bamba had his moments in this game. It's again, not the highest bar to clear. By far, Mo Bamba's best game in a Sixers uniform.
Yeah. I mean, bar was on the floor, but that doesn't make the performance any less good. I would say, and what I said in my recap was that it's certainly not vaulting him past Paul Reed in the pecking order, but it at least gives tape that Nurse will look at and say, okay, the next time that Joel misses a game, I can go to Paul and Mo and we don't have to play the Marcus Morris at center lineup. And one of the things I wrote about in my recap tonight, like Morris shot poorly, like wasn't a good game for him, whatever. But Paul playing center and putting Marcus in like a more natural defensive position, he wasn't as bad defensively tonight. Like I thought he made some decent one-on-one isolation defensive plays, like just standing guys up and getting in the way. And you know, not gonna throw a Marcus Morris victory parade or anything.
That's like
but
three victory parade comments in one show.
But all I'm saying is
they're all deserved though. I think that was an incredible moment in Sixers history.
Yeah. By having Paul in the game or later Mo, certainly, you just slot everybody else into their normal spots and you're not trying to do goofy stuff. Like, look, when Batum is healthy, you want to play Batum with other good defenders in the starting lineup and or and backup lineups and play Batum small ball. That interests me because he has had success doing that. He's been at other places and played that role and done all that, and it has worked like gangbusters in short stretches. No more Marcus Morris center minutes. That's all I'm asking for, because Paul can do the job. Paul's been a very credible backup center now for most of this year, this calendar year, I would say, from dating back to whenever he was a regular rotation player in February-ish onward. You know, couple of tough games to start this season. Otherwise has been, I would say, pretty damn solid as a backup. So give him more minutes, have the team play as they normally would with a big man, and, you know, take it from there, figure the rest out.
I agree that you can probably hide Morris the easiest at power forward. He's still going to be targeted at times in pick and rolls. His awareness isn't there. His change of direction isn't there. But as a one-on-one defender, that's probably, especially when it's not a one-on-one defender against like Valanciunas, but a one-on-one defender against power forwards is where you can hide him the most. Put him at five. He offers no rim protection. They're constantly attacking the rim. Like, he just can't do it.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. If you're going to hide him, it's at the power forward spot. But when the Sixers finally get all of their players back, I just think you have fewer Marcus Morris minutes.
I would hope so. And I hope that as Jaden gets healthier, that he plays more. And look, the three-point shot is going to largely define his season. If he makes shots, I think he gets minutes. If he doesn't, then I don't think Nurse trusts him enough to just give him unlimited rope. But yeah, we're going to see.
Agreed. Agreed. We really haven't spoken about Cove at all. I thought that was a strong Cove game. His hands in the first half were incredible. It felt like every time Jason Tatum put the ball on the deck, Covington was there to poke it away. A real strong Cove game, and he made his threes. A couple of mistakes here and there. The drive at the end, the most prominent, but he ended up with 18 points, 5 rebounds, 5 steals, and a block, and made 3 of 6 three-pointers. He was just all over the place in the first half defensively. And again, I think one of the key swings of this game, besides that 4-point play against Belton that wasn't overturned, was the fact the Sixers forced a lot of first half turnovers and didn't convert them into points. But I thought Covington was instrumental in giving them a chance to get out in transition, even if it didn't get the impact it should have.
Yeah. I mean, look, it was a classic Cove game with a lot of help defense, you know, active hands everywhere. I even thought early on KJ Martin was going to join him in that department. Like, he had some nice stunts toward the middle of the floor to knock balls away, help create turnovers. And then the rest of the game was just like, yeah, it's kind of, I remember when we sat down post trade after you finally got to watching a lot of KJ defensive possessions, and you were like, yeah, I'm not exactly sure if he knows what he's doing, and that's kind of a problem. And so I think you saw a lot of that in an extended role tonight. And look, he's a guy trying to impress in a small sample, small window of playing time, being thrust now into a bigger role. So not going to kill him completely, but I think you can see he's pretty rough around the edges.
I think he has the tools to be a good defender in a league, but I think sometimes sometimes defense gets simplified to athleticism and effort and size. And there's some knowledge and experience and, you know, interpreting the game that goes into it as well. I think he has the tools, and I think he has a motor where he can be a contributor down the line. I sort of expect him to get there someday. He's not currently there. And when you combine that with the fact that he's not a reliable offensive shooter, not a reliable offensive player, not a reliable outside shooter, this is not the team. I don't expect him to enter the rotation and stay in it this year. I think Springer is farther along defensively.
I don't think it's even close. Look, you could maybe down the road see what KJ could turn into, I guess, and be similar to Jaden. But Jaden being ahead of him as like, he's just a stopper. Like, you can throw him on a guard and he's going to chase that guy over screens, play physical defense, can make plays at the rim. He's like the idealized version of KJ, despite having far fewer NBA reps than KJ.
Almost 2 years younger than KJ too.
Yeah. I feel like that alone makes the case.
No, Springer is legitimately like a special perimeter defensive prospect. He just needs to be competent enough offensively to stay on the floor. I actually think at times this year he's been like, he had that rough start. I'm interested to see what he's doing when he comes back, because I thought he was getting better as the season wore on. I hope he stays in the rotation.
Yeah. Do we have anything else that you would like to get to, Derek, before we get out of here? Any questions from the chat?
I have not been monitoring the chat as much as I should. I see there is some Hayward versus Tobias debate. I think ultimately, if you trade for Hayward, you're probably not even including Tobias. So I'm not sure that debate needs to happen. I don't think it would take all that much to get Hayward at this stage of his career, but I have mentioned him as a possible target. You know, not a primary trade deadline acquisition, but a secondary.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think he's a guy who can still contribute.
Derek, and actually, you know what? This is maybe an off-show topic, but I think that might be either an article for the two of us or a show that we do one day about guys that we would consider primary targets versus secondary targets for the Sixers. Because I think that's...
For sure.
It's a very important... I mean, we got on that line of thinking with Dorian Finney-Smith on Thursday's show, but I think there's a big distinction between, right, this guy's the needle mover, that if they get this guy, that's a signal they're going all in. And there's other players that are like, they would have to be accompanied by a bigger move to consider making it.
Yeah, he's not like, and Hayward came out like gangbusters to start the year. He's really struggled here over the last couple of weeks. Now, granted, Charlotte stinks. He'd probably be better on a team like the Sixers, where you have actual guys with gravity, actual real shot creators and difference makers. That being said, you're not giving up much of value for him. It's just you're going to add him, bank on the fact that he has some shooting and some playmaking and decision-making that you trust, and hope that he can give you more than you expect, but you're not going to give up assets to do that.
Yeah, look, like Hayward is nowhere near his peak, but he gives you some light point forward skills, right? Like a guy who not only can take somebody off the bounce on a closeout, but will make snappy reads off the bounce. And, you know, he might hit a little drop off to Joel, to guys who are cutting, hit the occasional pass over the top on a drive. Like he can do those sorts of things that gives him value and basically any lineup. Now, I couldn't really tell you what his defensive utility is at this point, because I don't spend a whole lot of time watching that Charlotte Hornets team.
And he's 34 and was never a great defender anyway.
Yeah, so I wouldn't imagine he's given you much there. But yeah, he's definitely an option. But if that's the biggest player they come away with at the deadline, I think that'd be a big disappointment.
Yep, I agree. But we have plenty of time before we get to that point. I think for late on a Friday night, I think that's probably about all that I have.
Yeah. Well, we did have a very lively chat today. I wanted to shout out, as always, my guy Money Mar, Joaquin, The Village, Troy, Kyle, another Kyle, you had a great name, Kevin, Austin Krell, as loath as I am to give him credit ever, Brandon, Troy again, Aubrey, Ramich, not sure which. I apologize if I butchered her name. Randy, Espy, Phil, Frank, Ash earlier. There was another Frank earlier. You know, I love you guys for showing up for us each and every day.
Did you skip over Krell intentionally?
I gave him his own individualized shout out. You must have missed it. Thank you guys so much for being with us. If you could, on your way out, hit that subscribe button. If you hit the bell icon, you will get notifications whenever we go live or whenever our wonderful coworkers go live. So that'd be awesome. And if you could hit the thumbs up button on the video, that helps us out quite a bit. So until next time, we will see you Monday. You might even see another person in here pretty soon, but not going to give any surprises away yet. I'll talk to you soon, guys.